So today we're looking at Where is Kunst? A piece that really digs into the expanded art terminology, using the human being and even human flesh as the artwork itself.
Yeah, this is conceptually, it's very daring work. It moves from these philosophical heights right into the raw, visceral reality of the body.
Right.
And we've identified, I think, three crucial opportunities to refine that flow and really maximize the intellectual impact of the piece.
Let's start with what feels like the biggest conceptual hurdle, which is the structural flow.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophical leap from the democratic social sculpture to the visceral concept of flesh as art, it needs a stronger, more explicit conceptual bridge to hold it all together.
Okay.
As I see it, the material makes a really powerful case for Joseph Beuys's idea, Jedermensch ist Kunst, you know?
Every human is art.
Exactly.
As a concept about creative potential, social impact, the social plastic.
But then it just executes this really rapid shift to the deeply material, almost shocking Fleisch ist Kunst.
Right, with the Joplin factory, the meat bags, and flesh phones.
And while that contrast is obviously intentional and provocative, the link between those two huge ideas feels, well, it feels sequential. It's Beuys first, then Joplin later.
I see. So not integrated.
Not integrated, exactly. The reader might struggle to see why Beuys's idealism requires the Joplin factory's stark materialism.
That structural gap is definitely there. But I do wonder, is it possible we're underestimating the reader a bit? Could the shock be the bridge?
How so?
That sort of conceptual whiplash, where the idealism of the expanded concept just immediately collapses into the unavoidable reality of flesh as matter.
That's a valid artistic defense, for sure. The shock creates tension. But for a document that's trying to build a really robust theoretical framework, relying only on shock, it feels like it sacrifices some structural depth. We want the Joplin factory to feel like the necessary logical consequence of the Beuysian ideal.
Not just a dramatic counterpoint.
Exactly. If Beuys says every human is art, we need an intellectual mechanism that forces us to confront the material consequences of that, the body itself, before we even get to the factory floor.
That makes sense. That's a compelling argument for structural necessity. And the material already has the tools, right? The strength is its engagement with the body as a starting point.
Right. With Tim Ulrich's declaring himself the first living artwork or Manzoni's living sculptures?
Exactly. So building on that, we need to reinforce the idea of the physical body as the mandatory art material before the flesh becomes just a subject of critique or something to be sold.
So the body is the primary unavoidable medium?
It has to be. And if it is, then the transition to flesh as art becomes a necessary philosophical next step, not a jump.
Okay, so the key is transforming a chronological presentation into a kind of conceptual inevitability. How do we actually do that with the material we have?
Well, we can pivot using the concept of the ready-made. The text already talks about Duchamp.
Mm-hmm.
So what if we precede the Joplin factory section with an explicit chapter defining the human body as the ultimate ready-made?
I like that.
If any old object can become art, just by designation, then the human body, the most complex, temporary, unavoidable thing we inhabit, is the greatest ready-made of all.
The moment we are designated art, we become the medium.
Precisely. And that immediately anchors the argument. It shifts the discussion from the sociopolitical, the social plastic, to the phenomenological, the material body.
It creates the perfect intellectual slide into the visceral material of Joplin.
And we can use the existing section on Tim Ulrich's Tattooierungen, his tattoos, as the core physical example of this pivot.
Okay.
The text already have that great line that tattoos interpret human skin as a writing and painting surface.
Right, als Schreib- und Malfläche.
So by framing the tattoo not just as biography, but as this ultimate, non-removable, skin-based commitment to art, you reinforce the necessity of the flesh as art section.
The flesh isn't just something to be viewed.
It's the immediate, unavoidable medium of the living artwork. And that reality demands the Joplin actory's focus on meat, on decay, on physical texture.
Perfect. That absolutely solidifies the flow. So now, let's use that stronger conceptual integrity to maximize the critical impact of the Joplin factory section itself.
Okay.
The Joplin factory section, for all its powerful visuals, it risks being read simply as shock art.
Mm-hmm.
Its relevance has to be explicitly tied back to the foundational art theory we've been discussing, specifically the market and the whole concept of the multiple.
Right. You're talking about the bulimia flesh clock and the multiple sold in the Topshop gallery.
Exactly. The material is so original. It blends the grotesque with the mundane, flesh on skirts, meat bags. But compared to the deep theoretical grounding given to Boys, the framework for why the Joblin Factory's approach is so essential is, well, it's less developed.
So it works as visual disruption, but it needs more weight as a theoretical critique.
That's it.
I agree. The descriptive cataloging of the objects is strong, but we need to elevate the so what question here dramatically. The use of the multiple shop concept is fascinating because it forces an economic reading.
Right.
So to maximize that critical impact, we have to strengthen the argument, overtly address how the commodification of flesh art through everyday things like backpacks is a radical continuation of, or maybe a painful inversion of, previous art movements.
So if art is supposed to be democratic and widely distributed, what happens when the actual material of the human being is mass marketed?
Yes.
The opportunity there is to turn that aesthetic shock into a really sharp economic critique.
Precisely. We have to relate the Joblin Factory's multiple shop approach directly to Joseph Boyer's famous and often misunderstood idea that Kunst is capital.
Art equals capital.
Yeah.
An equation that implies that human creativity is the true economic force.
Joblin literalizes that idea in a frankly terrifying way.
So instead of Boyes's idealism, where the human spirit is capital,
Joblin just offers the meat.
Wow, yeah.
Exactly.
We should link the mass-produced signed objects, the flesh taschen, the meat bags, not just to generic consumerism, but to a necessary critique of democratic economic theory and art.
So the question becomes...
Is Joblin confirming Boyes' ideal that creative capital can be endlessly multiplied and distributed? Or is it a horrifying literalization of what happens when the human subject becomes consumable, mass-market capital?
That tension gives the entire section intellectual weight far beyond just the visual disgust.
Right. It turns the whole thing into a painful commentary on the consequences of the expanded concept. It establishes Joblin as an essential, if disturbing, philosophical voice in the discussion.
And to really solidify that.
We should frame Joblin's work as a response to a specific theoretical gap the text itself points out later.
Okay.
When describing the Jack Joblin series, like the Lachskunst, the salmon art, you frame it as a necessary answer to the question the text poses, "Wird das Schweigen von Beuys unterschätzt?" Is the silence of Beuys underestimated? By linking the physical objects to Beuys's later theoretical silence, you position the Joblin Factory as filling that gap. It's providing a stark, material interpretation of the consequences of every human is art when you push it to its logical, market-driven conclusion.
That's extremely insightful. It elevates Joblin from just a practitioner to a necessary, critical philosopher. Okay, let's pivot to our third and final critique, which is all about activating these concepts for the reader.
Right.
The inclusion of these dense, legal, and philosophical frameworks, like the Kunstrechte, the art rights, and the Wohlgrundsätze, the voting principles, it's a conceptual highlight, but it needs to be transformed into practical, performative actions.
So it resonates with the hands-on learning structure?
Exactly. The material introduces this really robust structure with things like equality, independence, secrecy, and the art rights dignity of man as art, freedom of action, and so on.
They're conceptually essential?
They are, but they're presented in a very formal, textual style that really contrasts with the earlier, more open, performative exercises like the tableau vivant.
And the weakness is that the suggested exercises for these rites, I think it says something about just creating posters and flyers.
Yeah.
It just doesn't match the radicality of the ideas themselves.
Radical concept, conservative implementation.
That's a good way to put it. The text offers a great starting point for discursive art with the posters. But for a document designed to push boundaries, the connection between the abstract right and the tangible action needs to be expanded into something unavoidable.
Right.
We should be challenging the reader to make this conceptual framework impossible to ignore in their daily life, pushing them outside the sort of traditional art school setting.
So this is about turning constitutional law into performance art, forcing a collision between the artistic self and public reality. We need to create friction.
Exactly. Friction is the goal. We should expand the construct to exercise into a mandatory public intervention.
Okay.
Challenge the reader.
select one of the fundamental rights, say, the dignity of man as art is inviolable, and create a guerrilla art installation or a specific performance piece that tests the boundaries of that right in a non-artistic public space.
Like a supermarket, or a bus queue, or a government licensing office.
Perfect. The intent isn't just to display the right.
It's to see what happens when that right clashes with mundane, non-artistic rules and expectations.
Correct. The documentation of the public reaction to asserting that artistic right, that becomes the artwork. It reinforces the notion of art as a social force, and it fulfills Boyce's idea of social plastic.
Mm.
It ensures the legal framework isn't just studied, but actively tested against lived experience.
That completely transforms an academic exercise into a high-stakes, real-world engagement. It forces the reader to really internalize what those rights even mean.
And to wrap up the document with that same intellectual rigor, let's go back to the Zeke capsule, the time capsule at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This is the perfect final anchor for all the theoretical work. Challenge the listener to make the creation of their own personal Kunstrechte constitution the central document of that capsule.
So they have to justify which laws they want to preserve for their future artistic self, say 20 years from now.
Exactly. By asking them to legally codify their own beliefs, to define the ethical boundaries of their own expanded concept of art, they are making a deep personal commitment to the theory.
That is a fantastic commitment-heavy final exercise. It synthesizes the entire journey, from Boyce's ideal through the material reality of the body and into the future legal framework of the artistic self.
It creates a true sense of closure and responsibility.
Okay, so to quickly synthesize the three key opportunities we've identified in this critique. First, we strongly encourage you to strengthen that bridge between the democratic and the visceral expanded art concepts.
Right. By emphasizing the body, using Ulrich's tattoos, for example, as the initial shaped canvas or the ultimate ready-made.
To establish that conceptual inevitability. Second, deepen the theoretical critique of the Joblin factory. Frame its use of multiples within the art is capital discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Ensure the shock factor serves a higher philosophical purpose, maybe as the necessary material response to the consequences of Boyce's idea. And finally, take those robust legal and philosophical frameworks, the Kunstrechte and the Wahlgrundsätze, and translate them into unavoidable public performative acts of total art.
Yeah, move beyond the simple posters and place those rights in direct conflict with a non-artistic public space to really activate the social plastic.
Challenge yourself to implement these shifts. Think critically about how the physical body serves as that essential, unavoidable medium bridging the social ideal and the market reality.
We look forward to seeing how these strategic adjustments maximize the clarity and impact of your extraordinary conceptual work. Submit your improved material back in when you're ready.